Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. Gabriella Chilmi is an Australian pop singer who is known for a distinctive raspy singing voice. Her debut album, Lessons to Be Learned, was released in March 2008, becoming an international success, winning 6 ARIA Music Awards, including Single of the Year and Best Female Artist. Her second studio album, 10, was released in March 2010. Her third studio album, The Sting, was released in November 2013. In November 2019, Chilmi released a new 6-track EP called The Water. Gabriella consistently releases successful new music and tours the world. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Gabriella Chilmi. Where do we find you in the world? How are you doing and what's happening in your life?
So I'm in London at the minute. This is probably like my 11th year here, maybe 12th. I can't work it out exactly. But yeah, I'm just chilling at home today. My mom's over from Australia. So we're probably going to do some random touristy things.
So what was the inspiration or motivation behind moving to the UK?
So initially I got signed to Australia, Mushroom Records in Australia, and they kind of, cut a long story short, onsold me to Island Records in the UK.
Okay.
So I ended up here when I was about 15, actually, and I recorded my first record here too. And then I just stayed.
Seeing we're on this part of the conversation, let's rewind. So we mentioned that your first record is 15, but at what age was it that you decided, cool, in my mind, I want to be in the music industry, be in the entertainment world? And let's unpack the Gabriella's entertainment journey or music journey up to the present time.
God, if we start right at the beginning.
Yes.
So my parents, they always loved music. They weren't musicians themselves. Like my dad bought a piano. I think he found an old piano and he thought, I'm going to bring it back to the house. I did go to piano lessons, but the piano teacher told me I had no musicality and I should burn my piano books.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which was interesting. But I just kind of always used to sing around the house, sing around my next door neighbors. I actually had a next door neighbor who used to, train birds, like in, and I don't know what they call that. And he used to, when they used to do patterns in the sky, he would have like all these pigeons. And then, so they were like my first audience, the pigeons. And yeah, I always used to sing. My family are Italian backgrounds. We used to sing at like Italian festivals and stuff like that. Eventually somebody heard me singing and I sang on this show called The Good Friday Appeal in Australia, which was on TV, and I was 10. And that's kind of how it started for me. Somebody spotted me, ended up recording demos. It's just very strange. I don't know how it all happened. I didn't really chase it. It kind of happened.
Understood, yeah.
And all of a sudden I was kind of signed, and I was at 13, I got signed to Mushroom Records. And that's kind of how it began for me, really. I don't think I ever had the time to sit and think. I always knew I wanted to sing and I wanted to be a musician. You know, I remember listening to my mum playing, you know, Tina Turner records when she was produced by Phil Spector, and even Janis Joplin, and these kind of female soulful rock and roll singers, really. There was just always this affinity there with music, this deep, deep love and just like interest in it. It was just always part of me. So I never really questioned it too much.
When you got signed, did you ever see that piano teacher again to say, haha, sorry for you?
No, I never ever saw her again. I just remember she had like these flaming red hair.
Yes.
And she really terrified me because she was one of those really strict piano teachers.
Yes.
Scary, scary. But no, I never saw her again.
So now let's unpack. So you were signed at 13, you released your first record at 15. So let's fill in the gaps from that to where we are currently.
So what happened after that? So yeah, I was signed to Island Records in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I was connected by my management at the time with a man called Brian Higgins, and he produced a lot of, you know, big pop records here in the UK, like Sugar Babes, Girls Aloud, for instance. He actually is probably most famous for co-writing Believe by Cher.
Oh, okay.
which
Yes.
is Cher. I love, I mean, who
Yes.
doesn't love Cher? But
Exactly.
obviously a great songwriter. And at the time, so I was like 13 and I was after school jamming with my mates in the garage playing like Kings of Leon covers or Jet covers. And it was funny because we clashed at first because I'm like, oh, I don't want to make a pop record. Oh, I'm not sure about this. I'm not sure about this. But we ended up, you know, having this mutual love for, you know, records from, you know, Phil Spector records for for instance, and, you know, music from the 60s and 70s. And we kind of, formed a bond over that. And we collaborated and he was very much being at, you know, having a, what was it? It was kind of like going to school and learning how to write a song, craft a song. 'Cause
Okay.
really, I mean, before that, I was, you know, composing my own songs at home, like singing them in the, I remember singing them in the girls' toilets and putting on like a mini concert with my friend who was a boy at the time. And he would go, we were only like at school, really young, and we'd sing songs in the girls' toilets for people. But, you know, it was really, and Miranda Cooper, who was his partner, also worked closely with her. And it was really intense, actually, really intense situation for a girl. So it went from when I was about 13 to 15, that's when I was on my school holidays, I'd fly to the UK, make this record in this massive home, this English like estate home in the country, which actually belonged to Alice Liddell, who Lewis Carroll based Alice in Wonderland off this real life
Oh,
girl.
wow.
And
Okay.
this was her actual home. So, you know, I come from like the burbs in Dandenong in Melbourne, which is kind of like, you know, real like just, I don't know how you can describe it, but it's completely different to, you know, this kind of posh English, like old English town where I was recording it. But so I do that on my school holidays and I wouldn't tell anyone. I'd just say, oh, you know, we're just going on holidays, Queensland with my family. 'Cause my dad was always like, well, you're not sure whether this is going to work out. So yeah, do that. And then I guess I'm at the stage where we released Sweet About Me, which was the first single. And initially, actually, radio didn't pick it up and it was quite a slow burner. Then I performed on Jules Holland and it kind of, I guess that was one of the catalysts for it all kicking off.
You know, back then, back in the days,
No, back in the day.
we had CDs, vinyls, cassettes. Now, I love me a CD. I love the unpacking of it. I still buy budget for my CD every month. For me, it's a grateful or a thank you to for Energy Exchange to you guys for all the hard work and energy you put into your work. Now, I'm so excited that CDs, cassettes, and vinyls are making a massive comeback. But we've also got these digital streaming platforms that people are now consuming music on. What are your thoughts around physical and digital, and which do you prefer?
I mean, I prefer the physical act of like buying a record, you know, buying vinyl, especially going to, you know, unwrapping it, looking at the artwork and treasuring it like that. And also the experience of listening to a record on vinyl or just, it just sounds better to me. I think like the landscape of how we consume music has changed so much. I was right at the end of that whole thing. Actually, the last single, don't know whether this is like a cool claim to fame or not, but the last single that was ever produced in the UK, maybe not now, maybe they started to do it again, but was On a Mission, which is one of my singles later on. You know, I find that aspect of it sad, but I also like love listening, love being able to just take my phone. Well, no, I used to have an iPod full of music, but that's not the case anymore. And just going on Spotify and listening to all my favorite records like that. I've got everything in one place. It's kind of great that artists have control over, you know, if you're a new artist, have control over the way you get your music out there and all that stuff. That's a great element of it, that you can self-release and do all that and anybody can do it. It's also becomes really saturated as well. You know, it's almost harder to get yourself out there. But I'm a record girl, like through and through.
From 0 to a 3 to 4 minute song, your creative journey. So is it easy every time when you're writing? What motivates it? What inspires it? Has it changed over the years? Let's dive into your creative process world.
So it's definitely changed over the years. Actually, when I was writing with Brian, and especially for the first record, a lot of it was written by loops. So almost like you would say start a hip hop track, and there would be like, you know, a loop. So, you know, like maybe four bars of the same thing. And I would write loads of melodies on top of it, just loads of melodies and lyric it all and sing them all down and then almost piece it together like a scrapbook song kind of
Yes.
thing. You know, you put this there. Oh, that sounds like that could be a cool chorus or that. These days, the ideas usually start off on guitar. Like I'll be sitting down, come up with a little idea. Well, that sounds all right. And then I don't know, sometimes it's inspiration comes from different places and it's not always the same. And I'm not one of those people who treats it like a sport. I think some people can get up and write, you know, a song a day.
Yes.
I think I need to have that trigger of inspiration, but that doesn't mean that you can't go hunting for inspiration. I think that's important to set aside time to do that, to immerse yourself in new music or art or reading or anything that can like trigger that spark. But yeah, it goes through stages.
And these days, do you write with other collaborators, or you're writing by yourself?
So usually like I'll start off an idea myself or I'll collaborate with people. I love collaborating. It's really inspiring working with other people. And my first instrument is my voice. So especially when somebody is, you know, a great piano player in particular, maybe I slightly regret not paying attention to my piano teacher. But you know, they'll take the music to places where I wouldn't take it. And that to me is really inspiring. You know, I write a lot with my brother. I've been working with these guys in Glasgow recently. So yeah, I collaborate quite a lot. And it's just different for every song.
What's the plan moving forward? Do you have any new body of work or new music coming out?
At the minute, I am gearing up to release something new. I've actually, you know, I've recorded like full EPs and then thought, no, not a good idea. And then not quite felt that it was in the right place. You know, I've been in the process of like gathering songs. And now I think I'm finally getting to the stage where I'm getting to record them, proper record them. As
Yes.
opposed to moving them from the demo stage to, you know, a full-blown kind of record thing.
Are those the same songs that you thought that they weren't in the right place that you're just tweaking, or is it different
No,
songs?
these are different songs.
Okay. When you heard those EPs or those songs that you recorded and you felt doesn't connect or doesn't resonate, what is it for you? Is it a feeling? Is it your mind? Is it your heart all combined that says, this doesn't feel right?
Yeah, I think it's just a gut feeling. And
Okay.
like you said, like your head, your heart and your gut all have to like marry up. And
Yes.
if it's something that you're gonna send out into the world, I want to feel like I'm 100% behind it. Sometimes you live with these songs for such a long time. You want to make sure, you know, without being overly critical of yourself, it's just gotta, you know, it doesn't have to be perfection. It's just gotta be, you just gotta love it. You gotta love the songs like you love humans, like you love
Yes,
your
exactly. Oh,
friends and
completely.
family,
No,
you
I
know?
completely understood, but it's like it's a child, sort of a form of a child, so to
Yeah,
speak.
it's like a child, and then sometimes it's a whole process, like you know, writing. Sometimes you gotta kill your babies because you know they're not moving forward. Like I mean, it's not like life in that sense, but it's you get really attached to sometimes to things, and then it's a whole thing.
Performing live for you, what do you enjoy about that?
Connection with people, like that's
Okay.
my favorite thing, I think. And I love playing with other people, like musicians. You become really close to the people that are in your band, and that's kind of where the electricity comes from. And it's that driving force that I think for me that wants me to continue to create records. And initially it was really scary for me to be seen on stage, and I think a lot of people have that feeling of being seen is scary. And it t took me a while to get into. It took me like over 100 of gigs or so to be
Okay.
able to like feel comfortable. And now I just in that stage where I really love it, and I miss it because I've been away from, you know, performing for a while. I haven't
Yes.
released, you know, material recently, so. Yeah, playing a few fest. I got a few festivals coming up, and that will be really, really fun.
You mentioned connection, and I often bring this up with other artists that I've interviewed. So I'm that guy, like I said earlier when we first chatted, when we first came online, who's always in front, loving the show, enjoying it. And I find that everyone around me has got their cell phones out trying to get the perfect picture, perfect videos, tweeting, threading, posting, whatever they're doing.
And from the person on the receiving end on the stage seeing a bunch of phones, do you find that disrupts the connection, or is just where society is at the moment?
I mean, I don't think we're going to change it. I don't think we all. I remember when Prince did his series of concerts in the UK, you weren't allowed to bring your phone in. I mean, sometimes I remember I went to see Patti Smith and I was like, I just left my phone in my bag, because at first I got to Albert Hall and I was like, I had my phone out and I was taking pictures. I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm probably not really going to look back on it. And then I won't be able to soak up the atmosphere and experience of it all. Yeah, I don't really notice it too much, to be honest, but I would recommend like locking up your phone and leaving it at home.
So for me, since doing the Celebs Line podcast and doing the work for that, that's now I'm only was like, I have to do some posts on that for the podcast and, you know, at the concerts I'm at. So I take a couple of videos, take a couple of shots, but then the phone gets into pockets. I'm like, okay, it's enough now. Let's be in the moment. Let's just carry on and enjoy it. So that's a reasonable
rule. Like if you're on your phone the whole time, but if you're going to take a few shots at the start, for memories and to share.
Yeah.
And especially if you're seeing like a great new band and like you want to share it with your mates and stuff, you know, it's take a little video and then put it in your pocket, because you're going to regret not having, you know, when we're on our phones, I don't think you can fully immerse yourself and remember the experience.
Yeah.
Like I don't think your senses become kind of, they dull down when you're looking at things through the phone. It's just much better to the experience. Yeah,
exactly. Like you're standing right in front, the person yourself, whomever the artist is right there. They're like 10 feet away or however feet away. And now you're looking at the person through a phone or through a screen that is the size of the phone. You might as well be at home watching it on TV, watching it, you know. So
Exactly. So, you know, and I think that you've paid money to go see an artist or go to a festival. You might as well get that full, like, exchange of energy.
The difference between performing sort of your own headlining shows and performing at a festival, what is that difference for you? Do you prefer either or? You equally enjoy both?
Yeah, I like both for different reasons. I think, you know, it's your own shows. They're kind of, you know, people who know and love your songs. But festivals, you know, I've had some really great memories of festivals. I remember playing Team the Park, a festival up in Scotland, and it was really early on and I didn't know whether anyone would come to watch me or, yeah, I just didn't think anybody would turn up. And so a few minutes before the gig, I looked out and I didn't really seem to be anybody there. So I went back in, you know, backstage and like, you know, had a cup of tea. And then when I came out, it was like full. And I just wasn't expecting it. And the crowd was so warm, and crowds up in Scotland are really, they're kind of really rowdy and cool. Yeah. And, you know, it was a bit of banter back and forth.
Yes.
And I just had like the best time and it was the best memory. So I love festivals for that reason. You don't know what to expect.
Also, you know? And also there'll be people there that don't necessarily know your music or your body of work. So it's a chance to like, okay, let's get some new fans on board.
Exactly.
You mentioned that it took you a while to gain the confidence for live shows. So was that just experience, or did you go through any other sort of tools to allow yourself to build that up?
I think that was just experience. Okay. You know, I was like, it just takes time to get used to it. Because I don't think I'm a natural, like, what's the word? When people say like they're an extrovert or something.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm like an introverted extrovert or extroverted introvert or one or the other.
Yeah.
But I was always really shy. Like I was always, and I would get really nervous that I remember for like a long period of time, I was nervous I was going to like say something like in the middle of the gig, like just say something ridiculous.
Yes.
Like a swear word. I remember when I was really young, I was like, what if I get on stage and I just like all of a sudden just swear in the middle of my song or something? You know, it was getting over those kind of fears. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think, and also being hung up on things being perfect, especially when you play festivals, you don't necessarily have a sound check. You know, it's not your normal sound guy.
Yes.
You know, so it's uncomfortable in that sense, but you got to just let go a bit.
And also it sounds like it was a lot of mind talk and letting go of a lot of that mind talk to like, okay, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I did start really young and, you know, in hindsight, I wouldn't change anything because this is my journey and this is how it happened for me. Mm. But if I was to advise somebody else or another young artist who was starting out that young, you know, I would encourage them, you know, to take the time to really figure yourself out a bit more. I mean, never, not that you ever really have it all figured out.
Yeah.
It's good to have a strong sense of self when you do this kind of thing. Because there's going to be a lot of people around you that tell you who they think you are, which is hard to do for, you know, I was a kid and then a teenager. That's the trickiest kind of time when you're figuring shit out, really, you know?
Yeah. And absolutely, Dana, I'm sure it was easier then. Social media wasn't really prevalent compared to like the teens that are coming up now with, you know, all these comments and all this bombardment of negative energy. At least you didn't have that in your space as well, over and above.
There's one way of looking at it. It's positive in the sense that I don't think you can get away with as much. So you would have all these like record label people, industry people that could get away with more back in the day, I think. Yeah. But now you can't. We have more of an understanding of what's acceptable and what you can ask younger artists to do. And for instance, before, if they said, wear this, I didn't really have much of a choice. Okay. Somebody might say, you know, if you don't wear this, then we won't release your album or something like that. If other people hear these things, you can't get away with it. They'll call you out.
Yeah.
And I think that's a positive. And the negative thing is like, people just want content all the time, all the time. So it's like, you have to have a presence on social media. You have to, if you're like an introvert, I think it's harder now. Yeah.
I'm totally with you. Like, I'm just giggling because before I was doing Celeb Savant, I was not on social media at all. So I'm loud and I'm energetic, but I'm also like a bit of an introvert.
Isn't it? Because you want to like, it's hard to know. I always find that balance. Like, oh, I don't really know what to share. Or should I share that? Or am I sharing too much? Yeah. Or is too little? You know, I still don't have like the perfect balance.
Yes.
Or that figured out yet. It's kind of a learning curve for me in a way.
I love this game. I recognize if I had to ask you this question in 3 minutes, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 months, I know your answer will be different every time. And I appreciate that and I understand that. I'm not necessarily saying favorite, but if you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists, once we were finished this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
First one would probably be maybe Moon Shadow by Cat Stevens, Yusuf Islam. 2 would be Game of Love, which is Tina Turner. Tina Turner. 3 would be probably Janis Joplin, a track called Move Over.
Mm-hmm.
4 would be Jealous Guy, John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
And 5, probably a track called Change by Big Thief. Oh, it would change if I was to think about it more. But.
Exactly. But that's what I love about it, because it's like putting you guys on the spot. And I know there are thousands of them. And if you had to ask me that question, I would be like, okay, these were these 5. But like 5 minutes later, it'll be another 5 and so on and so forth. So I appreciate that. And it also allows us, the listening audience, to like learn about different songs that we might not necessarily know to add to our playlist. So that's what I love about this game. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Oh, thank you for listening. And come and, speaking about social media, come and follow me on, I guess Instagram's my favorite one. And that's when I'll be sharing where my new music is coming out. And I also do a few kind of, interesting live chats on there in a series called Chilling with Chill Me. And I've kind of had chats with hypnotherapists, an astrologer, another actor friend, and they're just like really relaxed chats. But yeah, come join me there.